AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. It's the Monday after the Friday that we thought we were going to get the RVOs for the RFF, for the RFS, and we still don't know where they are. We've been following the trends in the machinery markets. We'll get an update on what has happened over the last week, including a report on Machinery Pete's second monthly online auction.
Live from the sounding of the Monday morning gong, FIA Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson, then it's Jeff Cooper from the Renewable Fuels Association, and right after the news, a weather update from Kirk Hens from BAM WX. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Laurie.
Yeah, Davis. Hey, thank you so much, and welcome to AgriTalk, everyone. Glad that you could be with us this morning. Beautiful, beautiful day weather-wise here in Northeast Iowa, dude. It is looking really good, isn't it?
That may be the case, but you sound rather subdued this morning, buddy. Is everything all right?
Well, just no, a little... and you don't know why.
It's okay.
It's not okay. Okay.
But well, I'm sorry to bring it up then.
We lost a great friend over the weekend.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Chris. Let's just go ahead and get
I'm sorry to bring it up. Yeah, let's just move on. Let's move on, brother. In Washington, party leaders this week must deal with an end-of-year funding deadline, expired federal borrowing authority, and tough hurdles to pass a massive social welfare slash climate change and infrastructure spending package. Dems will likely have to figure out a way to raise the debt ceiling without the GOP, perhaps by attaching it to the social welfare and climate change spending package or taking other unilateral action. Brother, they're just going to attach everything to the social welfare and climate change spending package and then hold it over everyone's heads. That's just what this is starting to feel like here.
Yeah, but we talked about it extensively in Signal to Noise this morning with Jim Wiesmeyer.
Okay.
It's
good.
Going to be smaller than the $3.5 trillion. It's just the infrastructure bill, at the continuing resolution that is going to fund the government. I think they're going to get that done, but there's still so much up in the air.
Yeah. Well, as you said, the wait continues for an EPA announcement on RFS details as Friday came and went with no such word from the agency. Early in the week, Senator Chuck Grassley told reporters that he had been advised the information would come out on Friday. But as Friday unfolded, other lawmakers indicated that would not be the case, including Representative Cindy Axne, who appeared on Friday's free-for-all right here on AgriTalk, and you can check that out in our archives. Chip, Russian gas giant Gazprom dismissed speculation and accusations that it is not supplying enough natural gas via pipeline to Europe, a senior official at Gazprom Export said, just days after the International Energy Administration demanded Russia deliver more natural gas to the continent. Chip, more than 40 members of the European Parliament from all political groups have reportedly urged the European Commission to launch an investigation into Gazprom over alleged market manipulation. And if there's one thing that we know, it's that Russia is not afraid to crimp that switch when it comes to the natural gas flow into Europe, and they desperately need it. Prices are absolutely skyrocketing there. You think they're high here?
Yeah,
we have not even begun to catch up with Europe just yet.
That's exactly right. What's going on in Europe and those natural gas prices in particular, if there's any hint of some colder than normal weather in Europe,
forget about it.
Goodness gracious. This is going to go crazy.
Well, over the course of two decades, the United States devoted over $145 billion to nation building and support for Afghanistan. The economy that the U.S. helped build relies overwhelmingly on foreign aid, most of which evaporated overnight under anti-terror sanctions. The Treasury Department now says it will allow U.S. agencies, aid groups, and the private sector to send food and medicine to the country amid the growing humanitarian crisis.
Well, that's also decent of you.
Yeah, right. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau of Canada confirmed the release of two Canadian citizens from Chinese custody. Their detention was widely seen as retaliation for the arrest of Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou, who returned to China after cutting a deal with U.S. prosecutors. Well, pork prices in China have tumbled more than 56% since January. At one point, the country's pig population was down by about 40% from a year earlier, resulting in pork shortages. Chinese farmers spent much of last year rebuilding their herds before domestic pork supplies normalized and prices began to slide.
Davis, what we're seeing right here is what happens when you try to manage a market as much as the Chinese government is trying to manage a supply. Okay, you can't. When you attempt supply side management, you cannot get it right. You cannot get it right, and we're seeing it proven. They can't even get it right for a domestic market. It's crazy.
Well, and you can't spell free market without spelling freedom. The head of a major Asian ocean shipping company has warned governments may need to intervene to restore order to a global logistics market tormented by chronic delays, supply chain disruptions, and record container rates. Chip, for reference, container rates hit an all-time high of $11,109 in mid-September after having fallen below $1,500 at the start of the pandemic, this according to Freightos. And finally, look out, everybody. Costco warns customers about a toilet paper shortage as the wholesale retailer is having challenges stocking shelves due to supply chain disruptions, this according to Fox News. Costco announced purchasing limits on some products but did not mention specific items, saying, quote, some warehouses may have temporary item limits on select items. And if you thought we could just wipe away the toilet paper shortage, it looks like it's back. Chip, back to you.
Thank you so much, Davis.
Sorry.
All right. Let's take a look at the weather. Kirk Hans from BAMWX.com. How are you, Kirk?
I'm good, Chip. How are you?
Well, we're okay. Looks like we've got some warmer temperatures for the rest of this week coming our way, right?
Yes, sir. Today and tomorrow, especially, we're talking about some record-breaking warmth, especially across the central and northern plains. Now, this time of the year, you know, it's all in relation, but we're still talking about 90s, you know, 90, 95. So still warm for this time of the year. And then to follow that, which I'm sure you were going to touch on, is we have a good amount of rainfall. We're probably talking about in inches because we're going, you know, Wednesday and then into this weekend. So that's record warmth in the short term. It's going to come at the cost of probably some moderate to heavy rainfall at times Wednesday into the weekend.
What's the bullseye for those heavier rains, Kirk?
Yeah. I would say the secondary wave, which is going to come especially Friday night and as we're going Saturday into Sunday. That looks to be the bigger of the two pulses. That's probably where that half an inch to an inch and a half of, especially looking at, you know, Kansas, you know, western Missouri, southwestern Iowa, southern Nebraska, eastern Colorado, kind of those locations is where we're looking at right now. And obviously into Oklahoma and parts down to the south.
Okay. So after that passes, what does it look like? You know, get us a little deeper into harvest. What do things look like?
Yeah. Definitely as we're getting a little bit deeper into harvest, We're not going to be looking at as impactful rains. Now, we'll need to keep an eye on the tropics and everything else like that. But what looks to set up is more of kind of a ridge that comes over the top, which should overall limit the excessive nature of the rain. So this is not a pattern I'm seeing, you know, lingering 3, 4, 5 weeks.
Okay.
And something that's widespread. I want to make sure that's clarified, too.
Real quick, it looks like Texas and some cotton is going to get a lot of rain.
Definitely. Yeah, that's a part of these rains, too, as well. It will certainly be impactful for there.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Kirk. Appreciate you, man.
Absolutely.
Be good. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
Kirk,
you guys
Hans.
Have a great week.
Yeah, thank you. Kirk Hans, BAMWX.com. Okay, when we come back, let's get an update on what's going on in the used machinery market. We've got a test on some cotton pickers that we need to get to. Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, next.
On your farm, achieving better yields is always the goal. But replacing current equipment with new isn't always an option. Bring new life and new technology to your current equipment with a John Deere Performance Upgrade Kit. It all starts at your local John Deere dealer. Schedule an inspection today to see how a customizable Performance Upgrade Kit from John Deere can unlock the potential of your existing equipment. Search John Deere Performance Upgrade Kit to learn more.
A Machine Repeat here, folks. This segment of AgriTalk brought to you by our friends at Dakota Ag Innovations, makers of Dakota Shine, the best way I've seen to fix faded paint. Go to dakotashine.com or call 888-996-7801.
Hey, can I throw something out there? Something a little personal?
Yes.
Is it all right?
Yes.
Okay, I don't want to be weird. I'm not trying to toot my horn or anything.
I want to do a little market report, too, but go ahead.
I'm just as fallible as anyone else, and I'm very, very painfully aware of that. But this weekend, I was pleased to be able to perform at an Oktoberfest celebration.
Oh, yes.
And it was wonderful. Down at Adventureland in fabulous capital city, Des Moines, Iowa. And I'm pleased to report, and I want this to be as an encouragement to you, beloved listener, ahead of harvest season here. If you're trying to cut back on the drinky-drinky just a little bit, I am pleased to report that my sober streak is still intact.
Nice.
I don't know how I did it. I don't know how I did it. But if I can do it, if I can do it, so can you, good people.
Are you saying that the temptation at the Oktoberfest was there?
It was real. And, you know, I was with the band, so the beers would have been free. You know, it was kind of one of those, oh, he's got the wristband. Give him what he wants. Give him what he wants. Well, hang in there, everybody. I believe in you. I believe in you. You
good
can do it, too.
You. Okay. All right. You know, we had that Hogs and Pigs report, quarterly Hogs and Pigs report out on Friday.
Yes. Yes.
And our read on it was that it was a positive report, more than off about 4% on total H&P inventory, off about 4% on market hog inventory. And we have got December hogs up more than $4 this morning.
Yes.
So
yes.
Big move.
Market liked
it. Big move there. You bet. You bet. All right. Let's get to what's going on in another very impressive market, and that's the used machinery market. We got Greg Peterson, Machine Repeat. How you doing, Greg?
Hey, I'm doing well, guys. How you doing?
Good, good, good. Boy, I tell you what, we've got a lot to talk about, but let's just go ahead and jump right in with pick of the week. What do you got?
Pick of the week, we're going an almost 50-year-old tractor, a vintage 72 International 1468. This thing had low hours on it. It was only showing like 2,813 hours. I'm not sure if those are original or not, but this thing sold last Thursday. Farm auction in Market Center, Ohio, sale by good folks at Schrader Real Estate and Auction, went for $28,500. And I will be posting a YouTube video of it here either tonight or tomorrow. So if you want to watch some classic V8 power sell, folks, stay tuned for that YouTube video. But tell you what, Chip, these 1468s, 1568s, we've talked about it a lot, but man, you wish you could go back in time and buy them all.
And 20 years ago, that 1468, that was like that first big step up. I mean, there was the 1066, but when you went from the 1066 up to the 1468, that was a big move for a lot of farms.
Yeah, it definitely was. And, you know, back in the day, up until about, I don't know, 15 years ago, I mean, these things were not viewed as a desirable item so much at auction. I mean, 20 years ago, you could pick them up anywhere for $3,500 to $5,500. Right. And I looked this year, you know what the average auction price is on a 1468 this year?
It's got to be south of 20. It's got to be.
$35,807. I've seen them high as 63 and as low as 17,850. Now, granted, the 63 and another one at 47,000 that Mecham sold, they were front wheel assist, super rare jobs restored.
Okay.
But, you know, again, 28.5 last Thursday in Ohio, and it wasn't the prettiest thing to look at. But again, people just want them right now. And again, 28.5, so pretty cool there Thursday in Ohio.
Wow, that is very impressive. And, you know, you talk about a low hour machine, 2813 on a 1972 model.
I don't know what the story is.
That's a pretty desirable number.
Yeah. Again, I don't know. That's what was reported. I don't know, again, if whatever. But incredible bidding interest in that thing at 28.5. Now, that sale did have some other very interesting items, Chip.
Including another very interesting International on there.
Yes. I thought you'd get a kick out of it. A 1967 International Scout, one of those old vintage SUVs. So now what, 54 years old. The thing only had 52,309 miles on it, ran on ether, but it was not running on sale. They had a 6-foot snowplow with it, but not running, it still brought $22,000. Now it looked beautiful, so you put some time and money into it, and you could take it out in the parade or show it off, drive it on Sundays, but it was pretty cool.
My granddad always drove a Scout. He was very faithful to Scouts, and I've always thought, you know, I should get me one of those. 22 grand's a little out of my price range. Find me something cheaper, would you?
Well, these the Broncos and the Jimmies and the Scouts.
Oh, I'd take a Bronco too.
Yeah, they are scorching hot out there. I mean, if whether they're original or kind of worked on, you know, people see them and they just like, ooh, me want that.
Yeah.
They just keep bidding.
Yeah, when I moved to Cedar Falls from Chicago, the first thing I did was buy a 1979 camouflage painted Scout.
And, baby.
Nice. Yeah, I still wish I had it. Yeah. staying in Ohio with this next update?
Yeah, we had a nice sale Saturday, 2 days later in Wayne, Ohio. Good folks at United Country, Walton Realty and Auction, Darby and Doug Walton, great team out there. They had a little farm sale, some really nice stuff on it. 1982 John Deere 4640, 5,585 hours on it. That brought $30,000. Folks maybe saw the blog I posted Saturday after the sale. I think, if I'm remembering right, the average auction price, guys, on a 4640, which, of course, Deere made from, what, 78 to 82 there, is up 44% so far this year. It went from, like, 13 and changed up over 20. But, again, $30,000 Saturday. A couple other nice items. They had a 61 model 4010. Low hours, under 4,200 hours. That brought 12,000, so very strong there. And a nice older small combine, a 91 John Deere 9400, about 3,200 engine hours on it at 22,000. So nice little sale there Saturday in Wayne, Ohio.
All right. Okay. Well, we can't go any further without getting an update on how the second monthly Machinery Pete online auction went. It was last Tuesday. How'd it turn out?
Yeah, it was a great sale. Thanks again, folks, for your support and getting out online and checking and bidding. We had a record price on a tractor, a 2005 Massey Ferguson 5465 out of Oklahoma, just over 3,500 hours on it, went for $43,750. So those loader tractors, 10-plus years old, in good condition, really hot. And some cotton pickers, really interesting.
Yeah.
We had, I think, five of them, but the highest priced one was a 14 model John Deere 7760. Just over 3,000 hours on it out of East Central Arkansas from Greenway Equipment. That brought $255,750, which if I break that down, over 3,000 hours on a 7760, that $255,750 is the highest I've seen by a fair margin there. So there was a lot of bidding on that thing, a lot of folks after it.
Did the demand hold up for those pickers throughout the
auction? They did. They did well. You know, it's challenging when you sell five of anything on one sale, and particularly big ticket items. And the other models were, I think, were 11s and 12s. But down through the chain, they brought, you know, market pricing very comparable. But I did think the 14 model with 3,000 hours kind of popped there at $255,750. Although, I say popped, what really popped was a cotton unit 2 days later, which was last Thursday, consignment auction in Northwest Texas. I think it was in Plainview, Texas. I think it was the 50th annual pre-harvest auction they had down there, five-star auctioneers. They had a 14 model John Deere 7460 cotton stripper. Now, I don't know the story on this thing, but it only had seven engine hours, seven. Never been in the field, a 2014 model 7460. So off the charts, what the heck is this thing worth? Well, went for $290,000. And the highest auction price I'd ever seen on a 7460. Wow. I can't even really compare because, one, I hadn't seen one that late model, and two, obviously nothing close.
With 7 hours.
7 hours, but 290K, that was incredible.
Wow. Yeah, that is very much incredible. And then I look at what's going on in the cotton market right now. It's happening for the wrong reasons. We've got some breakaway prices going in the cotton market, which might be encouraging some of the demand for those cotton pickers. The rain is falling is a big problem, but We'll see how it goes. Hey, we've only got a minute left. Real quick, what do you got going this week?
Well, I got my eye by our friends at the Steffes Group now, steffesgroup.com. Check it out, folks. On Wednesday, they've got, I think, four auctions, first a hay auction on Tuesday, and then Wednesday, three auctions. One's a construction equipment sale. One's a trucking outfit inventory sale. And then they have another auction in Tamarack, Minnesota, with a nice line of hay and livestock equipment. So I think they got a 2020 Kuhn Knight manure spreader on that sale and a 2019 Meyer Formula F510 vertical TMR mixer. So some pretty cool, unique items on that sale. Again, check it out, steffesgroup.com, folks.
Okay, very good. And Greg, you don't know this, but you're going to be getting a message from Big Apple Joe Stackler with a question from Patty that came in on Facebook. Thank you, Patty. Okay. And Greg, we'll get back to you. He does that. Good stuff. Thanks, Greg. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
Jeff Cooper next.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Man, I'm a little split on which market to go to first here. We've got Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady with us. I think we're going to go over to corn, Beach. Big move, double-digit gains going on in the corn market. What's happening?
Yeah, there's no real fundamentals behind it, Chip, other than the fact that when you look at commodities as a whole, they're up sharply today. And so, you know, if you dial it back a week, we had the big risk off last Monday.
Yeah.
Big risk on today, and that's fueling those strong gains in the corn market, up over 10 cents here at mid-morning. Soybean market trading about the same higher, so, you know, given the price differentials, corn is definitely leading us to the upside this morning.
No doubt. Had a nice bean export sale announced, too.
Yeah, China. And, you know, we need that demand because the soybean demand right now obviously slowed with the Gulf stuff and the other things that are going on, just off to a rough start to the new crop marketing year here on the export side of things. So we need to see those Chinese sales come in, but we need to get some more shipments going out as well. And that's really issue right now.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Not a lot happening in the live cattle market. The cattle on feed report was pretty much neutral, but boy, a big move in lean hogs.
Yeah, and the hog market's reacting to the hogs and pigs report. We knew that the hog herd contracted versus a year ago, but it was down even sharper than what was anticipated. And that was pretty much across the board in all the categories. And as a result, we're seeing a big explosive move to the upside, especially in those winter month contracts that are trading more than $4 higher so far this morning.
Yeah, it really is an impressive move. It's a breakaway kind of move for a market. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Davis, last week...
Yes, last week.
The rumors flying through the biofuels markets and around the policy.
Yes.
And the effort that was being made to explain where and where not those rumors were coming from. I've never seen, it's been a long time since we've seen anything like that. So, welcome back. I'm Chip. That's Davis. And let's get to the bottom of some of those rumors. Jeff Cooper, president and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, joins us right now. Jeff, welcome back.
Thanks, Chip. Thanks for having me.
Glad you're here, man, because like I said, or like I tried to explain, it was crazy last week with some of those rumors. We did not get the proposed renewable volume obligations on Friday, the RVOs. Do you think that that was a change in plans, or was that never really set?
Well, Chip, there's no way to know, and this whole thing feels a bit like deja vu. I mean, we've been through this before with these RVO proposals. The rumor mill just really kicks into high gear before these proposals are released, and we absolutely saw that last week, and there was all sorts of stuff flying around out there, and it's really hard to know what is fact and what is fiction, and of course, EPA is remaining tight-lipped, and they're not sharing the numbers until they're publicly released. So we were sort of expecting to see the 2021 and 2022 RVO proposals last Friday. That didn't happen. We think we may see them this week. But yeah, we're hopeful that the reason we didn't see them on Friday is because the pressure is mounting on EPA and the administration to not do something stupid here and shoot itself in the foot by putting out some really horrendous volumes that would move the RFS backward.
Okay. I had an opportunity to talk with USDA Secretary Vilsack on Wednesday last week, and he offered up, he certainly made it sound like he had been briefed by EPA, because he was offering up excuses, I guess, is what I would call it, that, you know, in 2020, the country didn't use as much fuel. It was a surprise to the demand side of things, and basically said it should be adjusted down. Tell us what's wrong with that, Jeff.
Well, there's a lot wrong with that, and that's the other thing that we should talk about is, you know, not only are we expecting 2021 and 2022 proposals, we're also hearing, and it's being reported, and we're getting sort of confirmation from the administration that they're going to try and retroactively revise the 2020 standards. And I would remind everyone that the 2020 RVO was finalized almost 2 years ago. December 2019, EPA published those volumes. They published them in the Federal Register, and at that point, they're sort of etched in stone. And so the marketplace reacts to those volumes. They make decisions. They make investments. They plan to comply with the volumes that appear in the Federal Register. So to hear now that EPA may go back in time and retroactively revise the 2020 standards because of COVID and because of weaker gasoline and diesel demand, that just it goes beyond the pale. And there's no rationale or reason for it. The RFS already includes a self-adjusting and self-correcting mechanism. And so if you have gasoline and diesel consumption fall because of something like COVID, guess what? The RVO contemplates that. It's a percentage. And so the required renewable fuel blending amount actually adjusts lower with gasoline and diesel demand. So, you know, the RFS already accounted for the demand destruction in gasoline and diesel consumption that came from COVID. There's no reason to go back and make adjustments beyond that sort of self-adjusting mechanism that already exists in the standards.
Jeff, you mean there was some actual forward thinking that went into the RFS that we might actually have a year where it's tough to get to that number, and therefore, here's plan B?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's why it's so important that they get the standards finalized before the year actually begins.
Right.
I mean, 2020 actually worked exactly the way it was supposed to. They finalized the standards in late 2019. Those standards are converted to percentages. And then, you know, that percentage is applicable to whatever volume of gasoline and diesel fuel is actually produced and consumed in the U.S. And so, yeah, when these things are put out on schedule, the program actually works like a charm. Go figure.
Well, yeah, if you leave it alone and let it work, it works. Yeah.
Yep.
So tell me, if they go back and change that final ruling, that final obligation, do the percentages still apply?
Well, that's the part that nobody knows. That's the thing, is nobody knows how they would do this. It would be completely unprecedented. EPA has always told us, they've told everyone, look, once those volumes are published in the Federal Register, they are final. We have no way of going back and changing those volumes. Congress didn't authorize us or give us any authority or any way to retroactively change the volumes. Because believe me, Chip, we've asked them, you know, to, hey, you guys gave out all these small refinery exemptions that undercut the 2016, 17, and 18 RFS volumes, you need to go back and shore those up. And they've always told us, oh, no, we can't do that. Once these things are finalized, right, we close the book on them, and we move on to the next year.
Right. Okay. Let's stay on 2021 here for a moment, because the rumor, and you've seen the table, I know you've seen mm-hmm. the table, is that the conventional renewable fuel mandate in 2021 will be $13.453 billion. Obviously, that's not $15 billion. I'm not sure what the justification on that would be.
Well, and that's the other thing that just really causes us to scratch our heads, is we have been to court with EPA on this very issue. The law says 15 billion gallons. Congress meant 15 billion gallons when they wrote those when they wrote the law. And when EPA in the past has tried to revise that number below 15, they have been challenged in the courts by us and by others, and they've lost. And the court in 2017 found in our favor and said EPA had acted illegally in 2015 when they tried to go below 15 billion gallons. So we're not sure what legal rationale EPA would be using to knock that number from 15 down to 13.5 billion gallons. We don't see any legal wiggle room here. There's been some suggestion that they may try to use the so-called reset authority under the RFS, but even that we think would put them on pretty shaky ground legally. So we're going to be paying a really close... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's you know, all sorts of past rulings and precedents from the courts that would strongly suggest EPA can't finalize anything other than 15 billion gallons for conventional renewable fuel.
Right. Okay. On to, man, I'm hesitating to do this, but let's move on to the 2022 rumor that's out there. Basically, 14.1 billion. Again, that's not 15 billion gallons. That one seems so illogical to me to just snub your nose at the law that's in place.
Well, it does, and again, if you were in the Biden administration's shoes, you could argue that hey, 2020 was a mess created by the past administration. 2021 should have been finalized by the Trump administration. They failed to do that. You know, 2021 is almost over. We're just doing what we can. But there's no excuse for 2022 to be anywhere below 15 billion gallons. That will be the first year that the Biden administration could say, hey, this is entirely up to us to set the 2022 RVO. And anything less than 15, we just don't see how it squares with Congress's intent with this program. We don't see how it squares with the law. And we don't see how it squares with this administration's goals on climate change and exactly. rural economic development and any number of other priorities. If you're, you know, walking backward on the RFS, you are replacing renewable fuels with gasoline and diesel, and that is increasing greenhouse gas emissions. We did some analysis, Chip, that if these volumes that Reuters are reporting are accurate, that's going to add 15 million metric tons of CO2 to the atmosphere, because we're going to be using more gasoline and diesel in place of renewable fuels.
Yeah, and if the Biden administration would allow this to happen, again, and you and I have talked about this, you just got to question the sincerity of their climate change message that they've got out there. We need to get an update. Is there any progress being made on E15 and year-round availability, Jeff?
Well, of course, that's the other challenge that is staring us down right now. We had the July 2nd court decision that threw out EPA's rule allowing year-round E15. We are considering what steps we might be able to take from a legal standpoint next, but we're also, you know, obviously pushing for a legislative fix in Congress. There have been two bills introduced, one in each chamber, that would address this legislatively. We hope there's an opportunity to move those. And there's other things EPA can do administratively. And I certainly would think if we're going to get hosed with really bad RVOs, that EPA should take a look at how to fix the RVP issue quickly and do it once and for all before next summer. So we continue to work on that issue and look at every available avenue we have for rectifying that.
if they're going to make $1 billion available for biofuel infrastructure out there, it yeah. seems only logical that they would make higher blends available year round.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, there is $1 billion in the yeah. budget reconciliation package for higher level blend infrastructure, and we're certainly excited about that. But we're not sure there's going to be many retailers willing to make those right. investments if they can't sell the fuel year-round. So we're back exactly. in the same problem we had before.
Jeff, it's always great to talk with you. Someday we're just going to do nothing but celebrate on the show, though, okay?
Hey, I'm looking forward to that day.
Absolutely. Jeff Cooper from RFA.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Monday. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. So glad that you've chosen to spend a little time with us this morning on your favorite agricultural radio station. Or your preferred digital device. Davis Michelson here, your pal, Chip Flory, standing by.
Yes, I'm here.
Chip.
Yes.
Anytime anybody mentions those international scouts, and I get so nostalgic. Here's my favorite scout story, because Grandpa always had one. He always yeah. had one, and then he would get, yeah. you know, different models as, one would wear out, and then he would just trade them in. I don't know if I ever remember actually one wearing out. There was a time when he was on the farm into what for him was a ripe old age. Uh-huh. My man broke his hip. He was yeah. out there all by himself, broke yep. his hip, crawled into the scout all by himself, and drove himself to the emergency room and said, "I don't know, something's wrong with my leg. I can't walk quite right.
I heard a crack."
The scout got him there. He had to drive me to yeah. Dubuque one time, which is normally, on clean pavement. I don't know. You're looking at what, an hour and a half from here?
Yep.
But it was the middle of an ice storm. You know, one of those where you got to pull over every once in a while and scrape off the windshield because the
right,
defroster
right.
can't keep up.
Yep.
But the old scout got us there. The old scout stayed true.
Okay. So stormy weather is one of my favorite memories of my scout as well.
Okay.
It was deer season. I was back home, and there's kind of an S corner mm-hmm. out just east of OJ, and I was going out around there, and the back end got a little bit out in front of me, and all of a sudden okay. I'm going backwards down into the ditch.
Oh, geez.
And I'm thinking, wow, okay, well, this is going to be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
It really wasn't. It just crawled up out of that ditch like it wasn't even a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so impressed with that. What I was not impressed with was how cold my feet were by the time I got home because of the way that heat didn't work in that
right.
scout. Yeah.
Right. Well, now you were okay. So when the new Blazers came out, you were first in line to snag one. Did you pick yeah. one up? Didn't you? How do you
yeah,
like it?
We did.
Oh. How do you like it?
Oh, I really like it. I enjoy driving the new Blazer, and my wife really likes it. It's her vehicle, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. it's nothing like the Blazers.
Well, that's the thing.
You know, I had a 75 Blazer for. I went from a 79 Scout to a 75 Blazer.
Oh, baby!
Back here in Iowa.
Wow.
Yeah, living the dream right there, huh?
That's awesome. That's way awesome. See, because I've thought about the new Broncos. I mean, I'm going to have
yep.
to, side note, I'm going to have to ask you for a raise to get
yeah, okay,
one,
okay,
by the
okay.
way.
Yep. Talk to Joe.
Let me butter you up first, though. Forget I said anything.
Okay.
But yeah, those like with the Broncos, too, the older ones
oh,
are
yeah.
so cool. Give me
yeah.
about a 70, like a 1980.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd be happy. I'd be happy.
You bet.
And
that
I would.
1975 Blazer that I had was a full-time four-wheel drive.
Oh, yeah, baby.
I got like 3 miles to the gallon
right.
on that thing.
Right.
It was something.
Well,
yeah.
see, and that's the thing. We both prefer to fill up our respective vehicles with clean burning high octane fuel.
Right.
With an element of ethanol involved.
Yes.
Whenever possible. Cooper talked about retailers. They got to be willing to make the investment in order for this thing to take off. And this is a discussion yeah. that just,
It just keeps resurfacing, bro.
It does. It does. It absolutely does. And it was part of the conversation that we had on Friday with Representative Cindy Axne as well, mm-hmm. because that $1 billion in the reconciliation plan, I just broke it down this morning on Signal to Noise with Jim Wiesmeyer on the podcast. That's available on the AgriTalk app. It's available on Ag Web this morning. But I said, good you know plug. What? Let's quit calling it anything mm-hmm. but the Green New Deal, because that's what it is.
Yeah.
If it's not a full rendering of what was known as the Green New Deal, it's close enough. And mm-hmm. we ought to just refer to it as that. And in Europe, it's the Green Deal. It's being pursued and it's being pushed globally. So let's just call it what it is. It's the Green New Deal.
You know, I got hate mail for doing that, by the way. Side note, I wrote that up for landowner and said, this certainly very closely resembles the Green New Deal. And I got emails. Oh, you hate the planet. Oh, blah, blah, blah.
No,
but there's no
that is not
it.
True.
And I do not hate the planet. No, I live here.
Exactly,
for crying
but it's
out
the
loud.
Social engineering that is taking place yes. in there as well. That yes. it's just
that was my point with all that.
It's unbelievably concerning that we are going down a path of reliance rather than independence and freedoms.
Right. Amen. Preach.
Yeah. It's just unbelievably concerning. So if we are going to see that $1 billion for infrastructure put to its best use in the biofuel industry, it's going to have to be for the infrastructure that will bring higher blends of ethanol to the pumps across the country. That means that it's going to be an investment in not just a few of the facilities out there, but it's going to be an investment in all of the facilities,
right?
And make it available on every street corner. And let's get the automakers involved, and let's mm-hmm. get the Next Gen Fuels Act involved.
Oh, and let's change the narrative for one.
That's
thing.
Right.
You know,
that's exactly right. It is that important. It is something that we need to do. Started the show. Started off a little rough.
Yeah, yeah.
We lost a good friend over the weekend, a crop tour scout, a friend.
Yep.
And you know, I'm saying this because it's on Twitter, and I would rather see the obituary first, but rest in peace, Chris Narayan, and we're going to miss you.
Hear, hear. I'll take us from there. Thanks for tuning into AgriTalk today. I'm not sure who we have. I didn't see the thing, who we've got this afternoon, but you're going to love it. You're not going to want to miss it. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's Davis Michelson for Chip Flory and Joe Stackler. Thanks for tuning into AgriTalk.